Hi, my name is Penny De Los Santos. I'm a photographer, a director, and a visual storyteller. And welcome to Depth of Field, a podcast that looks at creativity and inspiration and tries to answer how to tap into it and find it more for any visual storyteller, really anybody. My guest is Elizabeth Crist, and this is a very special guest. I am a little nervous. Elizabeth has like a 20-year career at National Geographic as a picture editor. You also sit on the board of the Women Photograph Organization.
Right.
Foundation.
And a database.
And also the W. Eugene Smith Memorial Fund. And you're an advisor to Eddie Adams Workshop, National Geographic Photography Seminar, a lot of different things. Obviously, I mean, Elizabeth has had an incredible career and has influenced my career in a very big way. As a photographer, I worked with you a few times I did, but I always came to you for visual advice.
Very early on.
Yeah. And still, you know, I mean, I feel like I always come to you kind of looking, I always feel misguided. Am I going the right way? And I always feel like you impart such wonderful advice to me.
I'm just always happy to be in touch with you and have any excuse, you know, to talk and think about photography.
Well, you've influenced my career, and I wanted to talk to you because I know I'm not the only one. I know you've worked with some of the world's best photographers, and you're an amazing influence. And I just have to say, like, the handful of times that we actually did get to picture edit together were, I mean, I loved how you pulled out the nuance in images that I didn't always find myself. But obviously, I shot it, so you found it.
Right.
But I've always admired the images that you're drawn to, and I do feel like I learn so much whenever I hear you talk about photography.
Well, so. I'm very glad to hear that. That makes me very happy, Penny.
So I'm asking everybody kind of the same question. You know, a lot of the people that listen to the podcast are, you know, mid-career or starting out in photography or visual storytelling in some way. And so I'm like every creative person, you know, you go through dry spells, trying to find creativity, trying to find inspiration. And so I'm asking every person that comes to be on my podcast, you know, what was one of those times for you? It was like this, a moment where you felt like you weren't where you wanted to be, but you were close. You could feel kind of like the groundswell underneath you. You know, in photography terms, you know, you're about to have you're just about to have a really great shoot that's going to propel you to the next place where you want to be. And in that space, like, how did you get through it? I'm sure you've seen a lot of photographers in that space. So
that's true.
I wanted to ask you questions around that, really, because I feel like you're aside the photographer, you know, really kind of like their guru, kind of walking them through the space, helping them visually kind of get through a shoot and really see it better, understand maybe what they didn't get, what they could get. So Elizabeth would look at every single photograph I made and be able to find the diamonds in the rough and talk about what I wasn't getting, what I was getting. So I feel like I'm asking you a lot of questions in one question.
Sure.
But I know you've been thinking about this question. So I just want to,
I
want to give you an opportunity to say whatever you want to say in this moment.
Right. Well, I will say, first of all, that I had a lot of difficulty thinking about this question because when I think about creativity, it's very different for me as an editor. You know, I don't have to come up with inspiration out of nothing. You know, I'm always incredibly fortunate that I can be stimulated and engaged by work that other people create. And so to me, you know, that is the godsend and the lifesaver. So, you know, I was trying to think about examples, and the one time that I can think of where I really felt like I was floundering, and it wasn't too long actually before I sort of came out of it, but I was really struggling because the Chinese edition of National Geographic asked me to edit a book on China. And so I was thrilled because I could go into the archive at National Geographic, which has like, you know, 11 million photographs, and basically pull out anything I wanted on China. And they had images from, you know, before 1900, like from the late 1800s all the way until, I think I was working on this maybe around 2015, 2016. And so I was just looking at everything and I was just overwhelmed. I thought, you know, well, how am I going to shape this? I mean, I could go through and pick out all the pictures that I liked, but how would I organize it? You know, and I felt like it was my responsibility, not really the responsibility of the publisher. So, you know, I really was just kind of trying to swim through all of these just myriad, you know, the multitude, the incredible overabundance of images, trying to figure out what to do. And I finally started thinking about the fact that the images covered such a long time span, you know, because first I thought, well, should it be geographic? You know, should we look at different areas of China? Should it be something like seasonal? You know, should it be talking about, you know, the economic progression? Should it be chronological? But what really appealed to me was the fact that, you know, they had all these images from the late 1800s until 2015. And so I started pairing things as then and now pairings, sort of looking at extreme contrast. And then I got very excited because I thought, you know, this was something where it's combining the two created yet a third element. You know, it was like trying to do something new and not just group things. And so that was what we did for the introduction. And so I had all these sort of then and now pairings in different categories and then divided up the rest of the images in more kind of expected categories, you know, like I haven't looked at in a long time, but maybe work and play, you know, festivals or ceremonies, that kind of thing. And so there were a lot of different, you know, family life, I think. And so the rest of the images, and there were hundreds of images, you know, we could sort of divide along those lines and then just look at different situations and palettes, you know, for pacing and rhythm and make them different sizes and have pairings within the chapters. But for the beginning, what we did for sort of the big portfolio, the introductory portfolio, it was just so fun coming up with sort of then and now pairings, like a historical picture and then a current picture.
Oh, very cool.
And I love that. And it really sparked, you know, not only my excitement, but also all these ideas of how China had changed, you know, over the decades. So that was really fun. But again, very different for me, you know, as an editor and not as a generator, a creator of images, to be able to be kind of stimulated by the content. And so every project I work on, that is my, you know, saving grace, is that I'm able to look at all of what other people have made, which is always so, you know, tremendous.
People probably ask you these kind of questions about, like, what do you find? So I just want to ask you questions around working with photographers.
Sure, absolutely.
What do you find that is often kind of the roadblock for many of them? Are there common themes? I would imagine there are common things that you've seen among many of the photographers that you've worked with.
I think for the youngest photographers, or, you know, the very early career photographers, what can be intimidating is that they haven't quite found their voice. You know, they haven't quite found the way that they like to see the world, and they haven't just figured out also, of course, you know, how to make a living or how to bring their vision or what they're really excited about or interested in into sync with what people are willing to pay them for. And so I think that's really difficult. And so that's one thing. And then I often find with mid-career people, you know, maybe they've sort of made a big splash when they were younger. And it's like, how do they keep growing and changing? Mm-hmm. And, you know, people sort of at my age, or, you know, people who can be either very established or still really struggling, you know, when they're in the 50s and 60s, are trying to figure out, you know, well, what is my legacy going to be? You know, what do I want to do with the time that's left to me? And, or, you know, I have this incredible body of work, and what's going to happen to it after I die, you know? So there are all kinds of different things. And some people, you know, both mid-career and later career, are also, you know, they've been very successful, but are they just repeating themselves? You know, are they just doing the same things over and over? And, you know, maybe people are still rewarding them for that, but maybe, you know,
other
people...
It's getting harder and harder, it seems,
well,
right?
Is that surprising? But I think, you know, especially after the pandemic and lockdown, I think a lot of people are struggling to try to just come back to have not only, you know, income, but also just sort of a flourishing creative life.
So what is, I mean, I'm curious what your answer would be for this question. So how do you find your voice?
Well, there is no set answer because for every photographer it's different, right?
And what does it mean to find your voice?
Oh, you know, I think to find a way of seeing that isn't exactly like everybody else's, you know, so that if you're standing next to somebody and you're photographing the same situation or if you're approaching the same project, you find a different way of doing it. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I personally love, my favorite thing to do is just to look at anything visual. And so mm-hmm. I spend a lot of time in museums and galleries, and I'm very old school. I like to actually go in person, and I love to listen to creative people talk, you know, the way we're talking, or just having a photographer or an artist show their own work and mm-hmm. talk about her work, talk about his work, and, you know, sort of what got them there. I think it's interesting because I think different people are moved by different things, and a lot of people are inspired by the technology. You know, you yeah. see some people really responding to, you know, whatever comes along and sort of bringing something different to that. You know, you could see people. I just remember a story that I did with David Duvalet in which he wanted to photograph these tiny little sea creatures that were like slugs, but they were brilliantly colored and they're called nudibranchs. And a lot of people have proposed stories on this before, but he had this idea of bringing down a little plastic studio, white plastic studio underwater, and having a marine biologist move the slug into the studio and photographing. So wow. he was basically silhouetting them against white. And, you know, that was a really different way of looking at it. And of course, people have done very similar things in terms of, you know, just kind of turning people's minds around so that they just see something differently. Mm. Or I look at somebody, relatively young photographer named Alexei Yurinev, who came out of ICP and was just in the Netherlands, moved back to New York. And he's so inspired by AI and machine learning. And he's been incorporating that into documenting the experience of his grandfather in World War One, I think. And so it's just interesting to see, or World War Two, it must be World War Two. And so it's just interesting to see how different people are utilizing, you know, the tools that are out there. Even though, of course, AI is what's really freaking people out. Yeah. So
it's interesting. Yeah. Wow.
Well, but I think, you know, to speak to what you said, people have different ways of finding their voice, and people are also really gifted at different phases in the creative process. And some people have a million ideas and they're brimming over. Other people are really great at, once they snag an idea that excites them, at doing the research and sort of ground truthing and figure out what's really actually going to work. And other people are really great at executing it and doing all the technology. And other people are great at getting it out there so it reaches an audience. Mm. But to me, you know, the other things that people can think about is, who are you trying to reach? You know, who are you trying to move or inspire or become a catalyst to make them do a specific thing? You know, what are you trying to serve? What kind of purpose? And I think, you know, being a voracious reader too, I think also is really important to know what's going on. Mm-hmm. If you're interested in, you know, photographing reality and not constructing reality, I think it really helps to know what is happening in the larger world so you can decide if there are things out there that you mm-hmm. want to document.
Wow, interesting.
So just all these things.
Yeah. You know? That's so interesting. And I'm curious what your thoughts on where do you think storytelling's going? I'm sure everybody is talking about that, but do you feel like there is still a home for storytelling?
Well, I mean, I don't know enough about the entire sort of universe of visuals to know if there's a particular, if there's a particular trend or groundswell in a particular direction. But I guess I feel like, does it matter? You know, it's like if each person can figure out what excites them and what they want to do and not, you know, get stuck in a rut doing the same thing over and over. I guess that to me is the most important thing. But I do feel as if the one thing that does cause me a lot of concern is even when photographers, any kind of artists are able to find the funding to create new work, it feels as if the outlets for disseminating them to a wider audience are really becoming much more limited. Mm. And I really worry about that. You know, for so many decades, I feel like National Geographic was such a fantastic place to get your work out. And it still is. But, you know, like so many other publications, you know, I don't know how much their funding is going to remain sort of unlimited, you know, or they're becoming much more restricted in sort of what they can fund and, you know, the kinds of ideas that they want to put out there. It's hard to predict, but, and then of course there are some fantastic places still out there, like the New York Times Magazine and the New York Times in general, the Daily. But, you know, I don't know enough. Well, I don't know enough about the newer sort of places that are doing, you know, things like strictly online or, you know, in the world of Twitter and Discord and, you know, all of that and NFTs. And I feel like there are amazing projects happening, but I don't know how the creators are being rewarded in any kind of financial way so that they can actually make a career and have a family if they want to have a family, you know, so, so, and, but I definitely think the mainstream print, you know, outlets and even online sort of legacy places are shrinking, you know, the number is shrinking.
Well, I wanted to ask you, is it possible for a photographer to pick up the camera and just photograph people, just people on the street, and just keep photographing people on the street and have a passion for just photographing people on the street?
Right.
Bill Cunningham, we'll say, or whoever the next Bill Cunningham is. But there's still space for that to happen, for someone to just have a passion for photographing people, right?
I mean, look at Jamel Shabazz. Yeah. I think he is extraordinary. You know, how many years has he been doing that in places like Brooklyn and the Bronx and just Harlem? You know, incredible body of work. But, you know, to me, the most important thing is to keep making the work, because nothing else matters if you don't have the work. You know, who cares if you can get it something out there or not? You know, if you have work that you really love and believe in, that's the most important thing, right? So, but of course, the tricky thing is, how do you know how you want to be spending your time, you know?
It's tricky. I mean, I, you know, I feel the same way. I'm kind of like, wow, I've been shooting food. I made a conscious decision to turn a corner and really focus on commercial and advertising for financial reasons.
Living
in New York City, the overhead's high.
Yeah.
And now, you know, I feel like I've it's been great. It's certainly slowed down. But I'm at this place where I really miss what I fell in love with.
Right.
Why I became a photographer. Right. Why I even wanted to shoot food, really. And it was about the culture around food.
Sure.
And how people connect in a space around food. And,
right.
And so while the outlets for publishing food culture and food place are limited, I want to get back there.
Right.
I really feel like it's something that isn't being done and I'm trying to shoot it more. But I don't, you touched on this, but financially it's just like, who's going to support that? You know?
Right. Right.
So then you just, I think you have a decision to be, I think there's a place where you can make the work and make really beautiful work.
Mm-hmm.
And put it out there on all your social media outlets, and hopefully somebody will come around and be like,
be a match.
I'd love to hire you to do this, or I think this style would work with this idea we want to run in a campaign or something.
Right.
I guess what I'm saying is, my feeling is, to really find your voice, it means what you're most excited about when you pick up the camera.
No, it's true. And also, you know, I think that's why personal projects are so important.
Yeah.
I mean, I love the idea that people, you know, are just going through their daily lives and then they see something or read something or talking to somebody and something comes up that seems like an amazing sort of opportunity. And maybe it's something only they would have access to or only they've thought about. And then they think about visually, you know, what's the most effective way of getting that out. And it's true, you know, a lot of people are relying much more on grants and that kind of funding and creating the work first and then sort of shopping around for a home for it, because many places, you know, geographic included, are much more interested in existing bodies of work because it's a great way to break into a place. Because it's like proof of concept, you know, they see one that you can do it and that you have the, you know, the organizational skills and the inspiration to actually pull something together. So, but of course, you know, it's tough because it means that you have to come up with the funding first. So that is really difficult. But, but then of course, it's what you said, you know, you put it out on social media and then you have to try to hope, you know, that, but you also have to do your homework. You know, what are the places that you love to look at? What are the magazines you love to look at, or the websites, or, you know, the different feeds that you're seeing in different social media? where people are doing exciting things, or, you know, what are the places that are doing live events? You know, what are the public art projects that you love? You know, that's the other thing. I think people sometimes, you know, they're not thinking about like universities that have like galleries, or they're not thinking about university publishing or, you know, special collections in libraries, or just thinking about, you know, events, you know, TED type talks, but, you know, for anybody, you know, you could do it for a museum that has a related, or a gallery that has a related project, or for the department of a university, you know, if it has particular subject matter that's related to your project, maybe they want to host you, you know, to come do a talk. I mean, there are just so many, and I am a huge believer in public art. I mean, I really am a huge fan of Photoville, which I love. It's a festival in Brooklyn. But, and that you can apply for. But, you know, there are many other places, like the Public Art Fund in New York does fantastic work. And look at Four Freedoms, you know, what they're putting out on billboards, you know, and other outlets across the country. I just feel like, you know, there are, for every local, you know, think local too, you know, think about cities like, you know, Cincinnati or Austin or Phoenix, whatever. And, you know, think about, what are the public art opportunities there? You know, it's like what the...
That's so smart.
And also, you know, what the MTA is doing. I don't know which department kind of does it in New York, but the subways in New York and the buses, they're sponsoring incredible work. You know, like I saw one of my favorite artists, Vic Muniz, has like these mosaics on the Second Avenue line that are fantastic. And, you know, they have a lot of other people, William Wegman, who've done, you know, projects for them. And of course, those are much more prominent, but, you know, they're also like, they did something with the, all the 300 like bus stop kiosks that Ida Muluna, you know, out of Ethiopia had her work, you know, appearing just, you know, for a couple of months, but it was amazing exposure and just such incredible, you know, an incredible way to reach people in their daily lives. And so I think, you know, there are things like that. And it's the same with funding, you know, look at local funding. A lot of these metropolitan areas, you know, will have, you know, something that you can explore, like Chicago probably has incredible things.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. So I feel like we've touched on some things, and you've definitely talked about looking a lot, you know.
All right. I once bought a little pouch, you know, a little zip pouch, and it said, I eat art for breakfast, and that's my motto. It's like I just love sort of devouring, you know, visuals at any time of day. But it's just, yeah, I feel like you just have to look all the time if you want to make anything visual, you know.
Constantly looking.
Yeah, yeah. I think so. Personally, I mean, for me, it's one of my greatest joys. But the other thing that I think is really important for people to remember is to build your community. I think, you know, to be able to have friends you really trust to discuss your ideas with and to show your work and to look at their work and just, you know, find out what have they been looking at. You know, and of course now it's all been elevated to a much broader sort of community because you can do it on social media, but I still love doing it in person, you know, and so I love anytime friends come out from out of town and we can go see an exhibition and just make huge lists of everything that's in New York, but you know, I'm spoiled New York.
I know. I love when you write me an email and you're like, this exhibit's going on. You want to meet me? And
right.
I'm like, yes,
absolutely. Right. Because I just think, you know, the stimulation of being connected to people and being able to trust what people are thinking is so key.
Yeah, it's true. I think that it's, yeah, you have to have your eyes open constantly. And I think you do need to be looking at everything. And I definitely feel like for me as a storyteller, inspiration comes from so many different places.
Right.
I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why I love living here in the city.
Sure.
Because there's so many just new ideas thrown at me constantly.
Right.
Just on the subway, you're like, whoa, okay.
Yeah.
Culture really gets thrown at you here, you know?
It's true, it's true.
And I love that.
Right.
I love that it's, I also love when I'm outside the city because it's like, whoa.
No, it's true because then it's like so fresh, you know, to be in a completely different environment. It's true. So I still have a little bit of a hard time, I shouldn't admit this publicly, with nature because all the trees look the same to me, but it's ignorance. You know, if I actually bothered to learn about the different plants and birds, it would be amazing. You know, I look at people like, you know, Diane Cook and Len Gentile, and, you know, they know every bird and every plant, and I'm just like floored. And, you know, for them, it's pure inspiration.
Yeah.
So it's fantastic. But then, you know, I was also thinking about the fact that people who are more my contemporaries are like, you know, Maggie Stieber have turned to completely different kinds of work, you know, like the Secret Garden of Lily LaPalma, in which she's photographing a lot of friends sort of doing, you know, these sort of noir scenarios and reenacting them. And, you know, she won a Guggenheim with them. And it was so completely different from the photojournalism she'd been doing in places like Haiti. And, or, you know, like Lynn Johnson, who after, you know, decades working for National Geographic, and she's still working for them, but she sort of has taken one of those projects and went off on her own and has been doing so much with, you know, children who are benefiting from the use of cannabis, you know, to sort of treat different medical conditions that they have, if they're fragile, and or some of the kids who are on the autistic spectrum. And then, you know, but also, I look at someone like, you know, my brother-in-law, Bob Christ, who just fell in love with video. He was wanted to retire years ago, and then he discovered video, and he's like completely addicted to it, and he can't stop. And he's just lucky enough that, you know, some of the pieces that he made have been picked up by different people, and he loves doing profiles. And, you know, Wondrium just sent him around the world to do a series of little films, which they just sold as a course. So, but also I mentioned, you know, Josue Rivas, who, you know, has such incredible integrity as a storyteller, telling, you know, talking about indigenous values and the whole universe of his own, you know, people. And
that's amazing.
And then, you know, Adidas or Nike or one of the, you know, athletic apparel places hired him because they want to align themselves with his kind of integrity. And so, you know, if you can find someone who's basically willing to sponsor your message, you know, to get it out there, and you're able to make a living, you know, that is really incredible too. So, I mean, that's sort of the best possible outcome, right?
So it sounds like it's about just really finding your voice and believing in that voice and sticking to it.
Right. I think so. But not getting so mired in it or so comfortable in it after a while that you stop wanting to learn and look at new opportunities, or you stop wanting to investigate new technologies, you know? So, and that of course brings up the whole question of AI, but that's maybe a whole different podcast for you. So,
yeah, but. For sure. I love that. So, I mean, that kind of answers my question for sure for me. And, you know, do I, I think I just have to keep at it. Just keep,
but
just
I also
keep staying
think
open.
If, you know, if you can find organizations that you work with, I work with people now. I choose the projects because I love the people. I love to spend time with them. Like people like Elodie Maestorm or Jenny Stratton at Catchlight, I think are fantastic. You know, Adriana Garcia, Erica, they're so wonderful. And I love working with them. And so, you know, we worked on a visual storytelling summit this year, and also they're doing the local journalism initiative, which I think is so important.
Yeah,
it's really
cool.
One of the hopes that I have for democracy actually surviving in this country, you know, is to be able to reinvigorate the local journalism scene. And so if you can find organizations, you know, that are able to, you know, sort of support your values, and you can work with them and support them, that's, you know, again, the best of all possible worlds, right?
It is. And I think, at least in my experience, I've found that when I am working towards, you know, doing something that I love, the clients actually just come.
I think that's exactly right.
They see the work. They react to the work.
Right.
They can see the integrity.
Right.
They can see the, you know, the passion behind it. And then they want to work with
you. And you're lucky enough, you know, that we live in an age in which you can reach people directly through social media instead of having to go through a million
gatekeepers. It's way easier now,
So.
Yeah, social media, I think, has, in a lot of ways, made becoming a photographer and being a storyteller a lot easier.
It also puts a lot of pressure on you. I understand that. You know, you have many more dimensions to your job, you know, to your role than you had before.
It's true. Yeah. I mean, photography at the end of the day, and here's the funny thing. I mean, yes, it's your passion. It's what you love to do. But at the end of the day, for a lot of us, myself included, you still have to make a living. It has to be able to support you in some way.
But it's great to work for a lot of clients, I think, to see, you know, who you like to work with and what kinds of jobs you like to do also, you know. I kind of was for many, many years of the philosophy of just never say no, you know, just say yes to everything and just try everything. But of course, now I'm paying for that and I'm really trying to scale back. But I think, you know, for people in your stage of your career, everything is an opportunity, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, and again, as long as you believe in what you're doing and what they're doing.
It's true. I mean, of all the photographers you worked with, is there a common denominator among the most successful ones? Is there something you notice that they have or a practice that they,
That's a really excellent question. I would say the first thing that pops into my mind when you said that was most of the photographers I'm most excited to work with are the ones who have an absolutely unquenchable curiosity.
There you go.
It's just, they want to know, they just want to know. And I think that that's one thing that we, meaning, the director of photography at National Geographic, was also looking for, people who were so passionate about what they did, and they just wanted to know everything about something, because that, that takes so much of the weight off of the editors and the publication. If that person is so immersed in that world, you can trust that they're going to guide you past all the minefields and, the problems. They're going to be prepared, and they're going to help you help them, basically. So I think that's
excellent.
Yeah. And, I love when I can learn so much from a photographer, too. It makes it so rewarding. And so many of my lifelong relationships are from photographers that I met through work. And, because they had that, just sort of laser beam, desire where they just couldn't stop learning, it's irresistible.
Yeah. I think that's a perfect place to end.
Okay, great.
I feel like it's been incredible.
Great. Wonderful
so
to talk
much.
To you. Yeah. I hope people.
I'm probably going to have you on again because I know that there's going to be like many other things I want to ask you about.
Okay, well, you should. There are 10 million people out in the world you should talk to first before you come back to me. But okay. I'm happy to talk to
all
of you. So, yeah.
Well, thank you, Elizabeth. Thank you, all of you, for watching Depth of Field, my podcast. You can listen to it on any place you listen to find your podcast, Spotify, Apple. Thank you again, Depth of Field. I'm Penny DeLos Santos, your host. Elizabeth Crist, our guest. Peace out, everybody.